1510 AM WWBC, the Christian Voice of Brevard.
You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on WWBC, AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, as well as on the World Wide Web.
That's right. Each and every week, our shows are live. You can just hit the Listen Live button on 1510WWBC.com. Or you can see all of our, see, on radio. You can hear all of our archive shows right there on 1510 WWBC. We also share them on our Facebook page under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and also on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com. And that Sita is spelled S-E-E-T-A. We're here each and every Monday right here in our own little studio living room, right? Not drinking coffee. We've got Allie Tamber, who's Woo-hoo! With us, our resident guest and good friend.
She lives Yay. With us.
She yeah. does. She does. Pick her up on your the heart. Way. That's right. Pick her up on
yeah,
the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we sit here on Mondays. It doesn't matter which Monday of the 12-month calendar. And we have a lot of fun. We speak about kitchen table topics and things that are heating up all over the country. We heat up the airwaves. We just talk about kitchen table topics, whether people want to talk about the environment, they want to talk about a book that they've written, the reason for writing their book. Some people want to talk about politics. Some wants to talk about savings. Some want to talk about credit card debt. Whatever it is, we've become professionals at chatting, right, Allie?
Yeah. Indeed.
Right, Ellen?
Don't
we
you
can
know?
Chat.
Yes.
And so today's no different. And we thought we were not going to have a show today because of the big bad storm. We thought the transformer was blown. And of course, I had made alternate plans for this morning. And then Paul called and said that him and Danny could accommodate us because the good Lord sent someone to fix the transformer. And here we are on live. And I'm like, you mean we could go on live like every Monday? Like, yes, you guys are going to. So I had to text our guest. And so we had two guests lined up. We have Dr. Cheryl Woodson, who's already on the phone, and she's going to be speaking with us about National Family Caregivers and Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And our second guest at 1:35, the second segment, would be with our good friend Scott Darius, and he's calling in on behalf of Florida Voices for Health, and he will be speaking about Medicaid expansion in our state, and why we should care that healthcare is a human right and things like that. So,
and so one quick plug, because right now is open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act or for insurances in general. So even if you're at a workplace right now, so time to start looking at that insurance, seeing what coverages that you have. And if you need to get insurance coverage, healthcare.gov is the place to go. You have to put in all of your information, obviously, and then based on your salary or based on your income, that number is adjusted as far as what your monthly plan is. And I am happy to report that my plan stayed under $50. I have no deductible, no copays, and a $3,500 out-of-pocket. So it was a really great plan. It comes with a gym membership. So I'm really happy with the plans that came out this year, and I hope everybody that doesn't currently have healthcare coverage finds a way to get some, because there's lots of options. Zero monthly payment are some of the options.
Well, you know what, people
well.
Were having such a discussion about Obamacare or the ACA. I always said it's because Obama cares.
Right.
So with that, we're going to go to the phone line. We've got a friend who'd called in before, Dr. Cheryl Woodson. She's calling in, I believe, from Illinois. So good morning, doctor, and thank you for calling in.
Good morning. I'm glad that the hurricane didn't wash you all away. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, me too, because I felt so sad to text you and let you know that we may not have you on, because, you know, you always give us really valuable information here and educate us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, as well as our listeners, about the great work you are doing for family and elder care and all that. So if you don't mind, Doctor, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and bring us up to speed. What's going on with caregiver survival and Alzheimer's in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, well, I taught and practiced geriatric medicine for 40 years, and in the middle of that, spent 10 years taking care of a parent with Alzheimer's disease. So my perspective is the doctor-daughter perspective. I have a really heart for caregiving, having been one, but also having met so many wonderful caregivers in my career. And I call them the care warriors, because it is a war.
Caregivers are winning.
You know, it is possible. I mean, I did that, but I'm still here. So caregiver survival is entirely possible. We're very lucky because the federal government is now looking at an act called the RAISE Act. And RAISE is an acronym for Recognize, Assist, Involve, Support, and Engage. And it's part of the national strategy to support family caregivers and grandparents who are raising grandchildren. And tomorrow, the advisory councils for the National Health Services Corps are giving a whole program about that. And I'll be speaking, and you can find it on my website, www.drcherylwoodson.com, and on my Facebook page, the Dr. Cheryl Woodson page, a link that you can join it. But this is now a national discussion. We've understood that family caregivers are the backbone of dependent care in this country, not just for seniors, but for everyone. The family is providing 80% of the care that's given. It's all unpaid, and caregivers are at risk physically, financially, health, emotionally, and I think spiritually.
Yes.
So we really need to support our caregivers.
Yes, it always comes down to the support and how many people in the family are willing to give that support. And some people can, because for whatever reasons, a lot of families and extended families does have issues, socioeconomic issues, as well as health issues. And you and I both know, Doc, and all of us in the studio, that seniors are living longer. They may have illnesses, but they're still alive. And some of them need assistance because of cognitive issues or issues with ambulation and grooming and ADLs and things like that. So somebody has to be on hand 24/7 to help care for them. And I like what you're doing politically as well, because people should be getting, I believe, some kind of payment to help at home. This is how we keep folks out of the ALFs and the nursing homes as well, if we're willing to put that money into families at home.
Well, for every person in a nursing home, the last data I saw were there are 5 in the community with the same illnesses, same level of disability, and the difference is those people have caregivers. But compared to my mother's generation of caregiving, it's entirely different today. Yes, people are living longer, but there are also more of them, more older adults. 10,000 people turn 65 in this country every single day. And we talk about the baby boomers because we were the biggest bunch of kids and high school students, college students, and we're the biggest bunch of seniors when we hit 65 in 2011. But the Gen Xers are going to hit 65 in just 8 years, and the baby boomers are still here. So there are more older adults who are older, but also sicker, because American medicine, unfortunately, is medical care. It's not health care.
Right.
People are living longer, but not particularly better. And caregiver used to be unpaid female relative, and women are in the workforce in ways they never were before, taking care of parents, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, grandparents, in-laws, older adults, all at the same time while working. And that's new. That didn't happen before. But 25% of caregivers are men, and for people who self-identify as caregivers, new caregivers, 60% of them are millennials and Gen Xers. So everybody is doing this. This is something that needs to be on everybody's radar, and for clinicians, for physicians and advanced practice people and anybody who's involved in healthcare, the status of your caregiver needs to be on the problem list with the diabetes, with the high blood pressure, because the only thing that's keeping your person from going in and out of the hospital is their caregiver.
Yeah. Right. And you know what's weird, too, is I always say, like, you know, when someone is diagnosed with an issue that has to be a surgical intervention, the doctors and their staff don't have enough time to sit down with the patient and the family and say, look, it, you're going to be getting a colostomy, but this is what's going to happen. You are going to need more help. You're going to need mental help, emotional help, physical help.
So you're going to need to come in before discharge and learn how to do the colostomy.
That's right. But you know what? What we're seeing in healthcare, no one is educating the family and the patient. And even if they do, it's not repetitive enough for someone to learn. So you do need that family support when you go home.
And you need to treat caregivers as part of the team and invest in their education. But also, the primary care team isn't going to have time. And what I'm saying is you don't have to know anything. You have to know who to call. You have to know who to refer people to. I mean, you don't know how to do a cardiac catheterization, but you know when somebody needs a cardiologist, and you know the cardiologist you usually call. You need to have the same level of information, just a list of contacts in your receptionist area or whoever's doing your discharge, so they know who to call for adult protective services. They know who to call for Meals on Wheels. They know who to call in the community. And that's one of the things I'm going to be talking about tomorrow, is to teach primary care clinicians how to include this stuff in their regular paperwork. It's just a checkbox. It doesn't take a lot of time. But the other thing is the RN raise is recognized. And a lot of caregivers don't recognize that they're caregivers, because they're not handling wounds and lifting people and managing medications. But if you do anything for anybody on a regular basis that they can't do for themselves, you're a caregiver.
That's right. Dr. Woodson, this is Allie. I was looking at some of your resume and that sort of thing, and the piece that piqued me was with Alzheimer's, that there are some signs we might miss as being the ones that sees our elder family members at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that caught my attention.
The first thing is to understand that dementia is not normal aging. That dementia is age-related. The biggest risk factor for developing Alzheimer's and other dementias are age. But I have a 96-year-old aunt who was teaching 3 line dancing classes a week before the pandemic, and just scheduled herself to cruise through the Panama Canal again.
That a girl.
You know, so age is not a disease. So if people are doing something that is different, their personality, their habits, their behaviors, their interests are different from the way they used to be, it's time to get them evaluated. And it's time to get somebody to look at their brain function. There are some illnesses that masquerade as dementia that are not. Like depression can look like dementia.
Yeah.
If you have a urinary tract infection or you have a side effect of a medication, it can affect your brain function. But it's important to know the difference, because in 2022, dementia is a terminal illness. We do not have a cure.
Right. And it's not only about memory loss, right, Doc?
No, not just memory. It's how you understand and generate language. Can you see things in 3 dimensions and know how the spaces between things, where the edges of things are? These are called components of cognition. That's just parts of brain function. And these are the things that people are looking at. In fact, if it's only memory loss, it's hard to make a diagnosis of dementia. Doesn't mean you won't develop it later, but if it's just memory loss, and if it doesn't affect your function. This is why I want people to stop doing memory screenings at health fairs.
Oh, we do it at our job, too. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, some of the questions they're asking the patient when they screen them for memory loss, I'm like, regular people can't even answer those questions.
Well, the thing is, the people that show up, people who have memory loss usually don't know that. So the people that come in are anxious and scared, and they tell you chapter and verse everything they've forgotten for the last 40 years.
Right.
Those screening tests are just screening tests, but if you perform poorly on them, but you are still managing your money, you're managing your business, taking care of your grandchildren as well as you ever did, there's something wrong with the test for you. And we know that if English is not your primary language or you are not highly educated, the tests are not specific. They will pick up things and call it dementia that's actually not. And we also know on the other end, if you are highly educated, the tests are not sensitive. It will miss dementia when it's there. So look at behavior. If people's behavior and their personality and their interests and their skills, like somebody who used to be a master knitter, drops a stitch and doesn't know how to get back, then you go and find an evaluation with a strong adult medicine doc first, if you can't find a geriatrician. And then I think neuropsychology. These are PhDs who know how to figure out what the brain can and cannot do. And those are the steps that you take.
Well, you know, I've worked in nursing homes for over 33 years, and I do notice that a lot of families are not prepared for what comes with dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And a lot of them don't know that there is a difference between dementia and Alzheimer's. So can you tell our listeners, Dr. Cheryl Woodson, a little bit about the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia?
It's sort of not a difference, but a category. Alzheimer's disease is one type of dementia, like apples, oranges, and pears are all fruit. You know, an apple is no more or less a fruit than a banana. An apple will not turn into a banana. They're all different kinds of the same thing. So dementia is a progressive, persistent decrease in brain function that makes you behave differently and impairs how you take care of yourself. There are many different types of dementia, and some of the symptoms and how they show up may be different depending on the type of dementia you have. For example, if you have dementia related to stroke, lots of little strokes called vascular dementia, you may have more problem with language earlier than somebody who has a different kind of dementia. There's Lewy body dementia, which is associated with jerky muscle movements and visual hallucinations. So they're all different types. But the thing that's important is that all of them are in 2022 a terminal illness. And you want to make sure that you haven't made a mistake, that it's not just depression. And if it is a dementia, you want to start your planning right now.
And I think you're correct, and I hope people are paying attention, because every day we're finding out that someone has dementia that we know. Yes. And I see it all the time in our nursing facility when people walk in. And it's heartbreaking for a person to give up their keys to their cars, the key to the front door, their credit card, their banking information, and give up themselves.
It's heartbreaking.
Yes, it is. And I know some of these people.
Sometimes you have to do it.
Yes.
You have to do it to keep them safe. My mother wouldn't stop driving. I had her car stolen. Her car disappeared from the front of the house because I didn't want her to be mad at me, but I'd rather her be mad at me than have that call from the police that she'd killed somebody or killed herself. You know,
yes.
These are difficult decisions, and that's why understanding what it is you're dealing with is very important. I have 5 keys to caregiver survival, which I've published in my book, To Survive Caregiving: A Daughter's Experience, A Doctor's Advice, and you can get it on my website, www.drcherylwoodson.com, or you can get it from Amazon. The first key is don't put your head in the sand. If you think something's wrong, anybody thinks something's wrong, go find out if you need help. Don't wait.
Yeah, and you know what we noticed, too? A lot of our patients, they would try to get out, and you ask them, where are you going? I'm going home. I've got to take care of my garden. I've got to wash my car. I've got to go to work. And then what I'm seeing is a lot of people, their short-term memory loss is evident, because they're remembering their sisters and brothers and sitting on the front swing when they were children, and they have forgotten their children. And that is heartbreaking for the children when they come in to visit, because the loved one who is now in a nursing facility does not remember their own children, and they're calling their children the names of their brothers and sisters.
Right, and that's why caregiver education about what dementia is and is not is critical. 7 years into a 10-year caregiving relationship, my mother looked at me and said, "Do I know this?" I mean, I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the best treatment for dementia is to treat the caregivers and know and make your expectations normal.
And that brings us to the 5 keys. And that's our next question. The 5 keys to caregiving survival.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can go through the five.
Don't put your head in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
The first key is don't put your head in the sand. The second key is take the F off your chest or step away from the kryptonite. You are not super caregiver. Caregivers try to do with one or two people what it takes three shifts of nurses to do in a nursing home and a hospital. And it's just not possible. The third key is you have to tell people you need help. A lot of folks are embarrassed or they don't want to let anybody in their business, but it takes a village to care for an impaired senior just like it does for a child. And you need all the help you can get.
So
the fourth key is you have to let people help you. A lot of caregivers actually do things that keep people from helping. And I ask caregivers whenever they tell me, nobody will help me. Well, what did you say to them the last time they tried? You know, you can't micromanage. But the fifth key is to put your mask on first. You can't take care of them if you don't take care of yourself. And those keys are all to be found with more in-depth discussions in To Survive Caregiving and in the companion book, The Doctor Is In, Answering Your Questions, because that's specific questions. There's a chapter there called Another Kind of Widow, and it's for people who are married to folks with dementia. They're not gone, but that's not your husband or wife either. So how do you deal with that? And both books are very practical. I mean, this is how it goes, this is how you're going to feel about it, and this is how you get the help you need.
So caregivers, just like you've said, Dr. Woodson, there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of uncertainty that goes on. What are some of the ways that you suggest that caregivers take care of themselves? I mean, you've already said ask for help and some of those other things, but, therapies and so forth, are there things that you recommend that people go to?
I think the biggest thing, and this is what I used to ask families the minute I made the diagnosis, is to draw a line in the sand. What would have to be happening for you to say you could no longer do this at home? And many families find that the line is back there. They've already outstripped what they could do. But many families are able to recruit more support and move the line. You know, if this happens, I'll do this. If this happens, I'll do that. The other thing, though, is respite. You have to get regular times when you are not being a caregiver. And you can't wait until you're so sick that you can't help it. It has to be something every month, every week, or some regular period where you're going to have a half day, a couple of hours, and you're just going to do something just for you.
Right.
And shouldn't it be
like all the siblings should be involved as well?
No, it should not.
Well, you
don't know why your siblings won't help.
Right.
And it's important. What I ask people is the problem is not that your siblings won't help. The problem is that you keep expecting them to. If they help, fine. If they don't help, find somebody else to help. Don't waste your energy trying to punish people or trying to make other people feel guilty. And the other thing is, don't berate them for not doing what you want them to do. Ask them what they can do and value what they do. They may not be able to take a shift doing personal care, but can they get the oil in your car changed? Can they pick up your kids from basketball practice? Can they bring groceries? I mean, just because it's not the help you want from them doesn't make it not valuable.
Right. That makes me remember when my mom was sick, that's what we did. We had a sister who could bring provisions and cook. We had one sister who liked to do laundry. We have one that actually likes to do the bath and change in the diaper and, you know, the briefs and all
See,
that.
I tell all my friends,
then,
I'm not your cooking friend.
Right, and then we had one that would drive her to the appointments. But this morning, I had a girl that called me because she knew you were coming on. And she said, look it, I have six siblings, and my dad is in a nursing facility in Orlando, and each of us are taking a day. So each sibling is taking, one takes Monday, one takes Tuesday, one takes Wednesday. And I said, what are you guys doing? She said, well, we have a bit of a job description. Everyone goes in and they help him with the breakfast and monitors his bath and grooming and all that. And the person stays until 4 or 5 o'clock and then leaves. So that's why I said, sometimes you have some families that actually sit down and have a meeting and decide who is going to do what. And I think you don't really find out all the time, but this person...
No, you don't.
Yeah, this person, she found that her six siblings, everyone was able to either work remotely or get involved with her dad's care, which I thought was great because I don't see that a lot in the nursing facility.
It is really great, but I see a lot of caregivers embittered, and spending lots of emotional energy being angry because somebody that they think should do something isn't.
Right.
I think that's a waste of time.
Well, that happens
to
me now.
Get help from where you can. My grandmother used to say, there's no should, there's only is. You know,
yes.
Don't waste time with that.
Right.
Work with your area agency on aging. Work with some other organizations. Lots of churches have caregiver ministries where they will have respite for you. Go into your community. Start with the area agency on aging and find out what is available.
So, Dr. Woodson, do you find that people should sit down for Christmas, Thanksgiving, when everyone is visiting, and talk about DNR, talk about who is going to care
Absolutely.
For mom and dad? Because I find oftentimes people don't have that conversation about their living will, a trust, who's going to take care of the parents when the time comes, who will be the person making decisions. And I think that's one of the ways that we can all help Americans and people all over the world, actually, because in some cultures it's a given that the eldest child will make the decisions, and that's cultural. But here, it's not like that.
Well, I think it's not so much about who's going to take care of the parents. Who's going to take care of you? If you could not make decisions for yourself, who would? I mean, you've got to make it easier for your kids than your parents made it for you. And holidays is the perfect time to talk about it. In the state of Illinois, once you hit 18 is when you have to do your power of attorney, because the state of Illinois thinks you're grown. It has nothing to do with age or illness. It is a rite of adult passage. You talk about it like registering to vote. This is just what our family does. And when you talk about it that way, the older people don't think you're trying to kill them, and the young people don't think you're trying to make them old.
Yeah.
This is just what we do. It is when adults are responsible, you set this up. I gave my kids their power of attorney forms with their 18th birthday card.
Oh, that's priceless.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I noticed, too? A lot of medical professionals, they miss some of the signs and symptoms of dementia and Alzheimer's in their own families as well. I don't know if it's because they want to, maybe people are feeling guilty and they don't want to talk about it, but it happens with the best of the best.
This is why I don't think there's a role reversal in elder care. Because when you grieve like a child. That's your mommy. I don't care if you have a PhD in astrophysics. You're not going to want to see that. When my mother asked me who I was on the faculty of the University of Chicago in geriatrics.
Yes.
All that disappeared. I felt like a two-year-old whose mom had set her on the curb and walked away.
Oh, yeah.
When you grieve like a child. So even you, as a professional, needs to have a care team thinking of you as a caregiver. You can't do it yourself.
Yes.
It's not realistic to think you're going to do it.
Yeah, when my mom was diagnosed with dementia, she did not remember, she had 11 children that she gave birth to, and she didn't remember everyone, and she didn't remember her grandchildren. And it was heartbreaking because if my nieces and nephews were sitting next to their parents, she would say, hey, don't sit next to that man. You don't know him. And that was
exactly.
her grandchild, you know. So, Doc, go ahead.
But that's where the education has to come in. It ain't personal. Her brain is broken.
Yes.
You know, if you looked at somebody and they had a stroke and couldn't move the right side of their body, you would know something is different. People with dementia often look like themselves till very late in the process. And so people's spirits reach for a response they're never going to get anymore. That pain is amazing. But if we can educate caregivers, it's not that she doesn't love you. And it's confusing for families because they may always know where they were when Roosevelt started talking about Pearl Harbor. Because what gets in there before your brain breaks stays in there a long time. It's getting new things in. And you were talking about wanting to go home. People can be sitting in their living rooms insisting on going home.
Yes.
Because home was where I used to know what was going on. I'm trying to get comfortable. People will want to go home, and they're sitting in their own living rooms.
So tell our listeners where they can find your book one more time, because everybody needs to take care of themselves before they can take care of someone else.
To Survive Caregiving and The Doctor Is In are both available on Amazon.com and through my website, www.drcherylwoodson.com. I also have two books called Dear Lauren Love Mom, 31 Days of Affirmations for My Daughter, for Myself, and for You. It's a workbook and journal as well as a book. just helps you figure out how to take care of yourself. And that's also available on the website and at Amazon. And I just wanted to follow up on one comment that you were talking about insurance and open enrollment. For seniors, every single state has a SHIP program. It's S-H-I-P. It's Senior Health Insurance Program. It's free. You can call the Area Agency on Aging in your area and get the phone number. They will walk you through it. You can be very comfortable because they have no axe to grind. You have to be very careful with people who are trying to sell you a Medicare plan because many of them get money for signing you up. The SHIP program is only worried about what's best for you, and it's absolutely free. So please look at that.
Well, we will make sure all of this information is on our website and our Facebook pages. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us, Dr. Woodson. It's been a pleasure having you on
the
show. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll be right back after these quick messages from our sponsors.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a robust first segment we had with Dr. Cheryl Woodson, who took time to call in from one of the states I love, Illinois. I lived in Oakland, Illinois for some time, so I love it. And we're heard on AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9. 100.7 and online everywhere, Miss Ellen.
That's right. So if you haven't done so already, if you'd like to listen to us live, you can go to 1510 WWBC and hit the Listen Live button that's right there on the front page. You may have to download something, but pretty much it's a very, very easy process. And you can hear us live each and every Monday right here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, in sunny Cocoa, Florida. Just one more plug, just a reminder, the open enrollment right now for healthcare. So if anybody missed it on the first segment, make sure that you enroll. You go to healthcare.gov. You can get all the information on there. And also, we just learned something from Dr. Cheryl Woodson. Check out the SHIP program for seniors, S-H-I-P. It's senior healthcare program that is free for all seniors. So make sure that you check into that as well. Call Center of the Aging, or you can call United Way. Yes, and we also have a new sponsor this week. This past week, actually, Lizette's Cajun Bistro. Fantastic restaurant right here on Wickham Road in Melbourne. They serve home-style food from the Cajun area. Fantastic menu. They have live music every so often. I'm not exactly sure what the dates are, but you can check out those on her website. You can check out all of her activities and things that they have going on. Fantastic family-run, family-owned business, and now part of the Viewpoint with Sita and Friends family of sponsors, Lizette's Cajun Bistro.
Thank you, Miss Ellen, because you know they trust us to advertise for them on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and I have tried that food a couple of times, and
it's amazing.
It is spiced just right, and it's right near my home, 5 minutes from where I live, so I do love Lizette's Bistro, and hopefully we'll be having them in our lineup pretty soon.
Yeah.
So our second guest, oh my God, the first segment was all about caregiving and dementia and Alzheimer's with Dr. Cheryl Woodson. The second segment is with our friend Scott Darius, and he is the Executive Director of Florida Voices for Health. Scott graduated from the University of Florida College of Law in May of 2013. He also completed his bachelor's degree at UF, where my daughter Jasmine went, with a major in political science in 2010. And he is focused on helping people stay healthy in the state of Florida, and he is on the line right now. So thank you for taking the time to call in, Scott.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing that you could call in, because I'd had you on the list of people to call for the new year, and then lo and behold, because of the transformer blowing out here, the facility that we tape at, we were not sure we were going to be on air, so we canceled our show for today. And then we were told that we can come on, so I'm like, no, I need to
surprise.
Call somebody. Surprise! So it worked out really good, because here you are. And you're still with Florida Voices for Health, which is a coalition of community organizations and businesses and individuals who are working to create a perfect healthcare system in the state of Florida. So talk to us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with Florida Voices for Health.
We're trying. You know, I started in the health advocacy space ever since finishing school in 2013. And yeah, just like after a couple of years of working at Florida Chain formerly, that place, it unfortunately closed, but we had built so many strong relationships around the state and a lot of committed organizations and people who were really working towards Medicaid expansion at that point, that it was, the work was too important to walk away from. So we worked to keep the coalition together, and now beyond Medicaid expansion, we're also working on, you know, all of the other pressing healthcare issues that exist here in Florida.
Yeah, and the key word, Scott, is affordable, isn't it? And Ellen just gave a pitch for the Affordable Care Act by telling our listeners that she just signed up for it as well. And it's amazing if people know how to navigate the website and put in their information. It is a great place to get health insurance.
Absolutely. Great options.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great options and much more.
And I would even say that, I feel like it's a good plug to make for the Florida Navigators, who for the last 10 open enrollments, I think we're 10 years in now, have done a really good job of helping people around the state to get covered. So if you are one of those folks who's new to the marketplace, or, you know, you're not totally familiar or you want to be sure, I would encourage you to visit coveringflorida.org. They're navigators in all 67 counties, and these guys really know what they're talking about. So I encourage everyone to check that out.
I was also really impressed with the Florida Voices for Health website as well, the healthyflorida.org, which is healthyfla.org. I was really impressed with all the information that was on there as well to help people navigate, you know, and some of the big questions such like that's right on the front page, that I'm insured, but a free local clinic is my only reasonable option for healthcare. because of deductibles and because of all of the other things. So the healthcare navigators and your website is fantastic for answering a lot of those questions. So kudos.
Awesome. Thank you.
So, Scott, let's talk a little bit about Medicaid expansion and how it would help. Who would Medicaid expansion help? And what can we do to spread the word more about how much more is needed to be done to expand Medicaid in the state of Florida?
No, that's a great question. And I think the place to start is just pointing out that there are still so many Floridians who are living paycheck to paycheck and finding, right, healthcare is unaffordable for a lot of us, whether you have insurance or not. I think that's like the hard truth. But there's a subset of Floridians, almost 500,000 people, who don't qualify for healthcare in any way. They either make too much to qualify for Medicaid here in Florida, or they make too little to qualify for tax credits in the ACA marketplace. Now, what most people might not know up front is just how hard it is to qualify for Medicaid in Florida. We have one of the more restrictive programs in the entire country. If you are a single adult, if you don't have dependent children, you don't qualify regardless of how little you make. So if you're just a single adult, you don't have any kids, you're working a job at Walmart, and, you know, I say full-time, but we all know that places like that tend to not allow people to get up to the full 40 hours. But typically, those folks don't have access to health insurance. Now, if you do have a dependent child in Florida, let's say you're an adult in a family of three, the most you can make is $7,000 for the year and still qualify for Medicaid. So let's say you're working that job at Walmart or, you know, fast food, and you're rich. You're making $15,000 in a year, $20,000 in a year. You do not qualify for Medicaid or ACA tax credits. And it's those folks specifically, close to 500,000, who don't have any options for healthcare. And that's who Medicaid expansion would benefit.
And that's what we call people who fall into that gap.
The working poor.
That is a huge gap for people. And I think that's when you people say, well, I'm going to have to work under the table. Or people have to do jobs that other people won't do because they need to have that income to pay their rent, car payment, utilities. And now they're in a dire straits because they can't qualify for medical insurance. So what does people do, Scott? I mean, because a lot of them can't even afford to see a private doctor at that point.
No, you make a great point about how the desperation manifests, right? Like what people end up doing to try to account for the fact that they don't have care. We, you know, us as voices, our job is to try to capture the stories of people around the state who are dealing with this, and we try to elevate those stories so that legislators really start to get a sense of what the need is. And it's really the hardest part of the job because you hear stories like one woman who has to use a Facebook group where they kind of trade medical supplies and things that they need. So for a woman who has a colostomy bag or who needs colostomy bags but can't afford that and like the routine care that, you know, she would kind of need to maintain, she instead just kind of barters on in a Facebook group to get things that don't fit her, but things that she can like jerry-rig to work for. You have people who go wait in like at free clinic events, which usually means sleeping in a parking lot overnight while you wait to hopefully be seen for your condition. Or, you know, if you're lucky, you go to a neighborhood clinic where you're not guaranteed to get the same physician all the time, and so you're constantly kind of re-explaining your story, but then the person you're dealing with is also giving you fresh advice. So, yeah, it's just, you see people try a lot of different ways to get over that hump, and none of it is actually, like, as effective as it can be or needs to be.
Scott, how do we get our legislators, and is it to be on board with this and to address it, and is it a national issue or are we talking Florida issue?
It's a Florida issue. That's a great question. When the ACA passed, each state had the, you know, they said the ACA was constitutional, but then on the Medicaid expansion piece, that was deemed optional. So each state legislature has had the opportunity to adopt it. And over the last 10, 12 years, we've seen that Florida is now one of the last 11 states to take it up. We saw it pass in South Dakota via a ballot initiative this past Tuesday. We know that, that North Carolina is debating it. We've seen a lot of red states, and we've seen a lot of blue states pick it up. Now, here in Florida, our job, what we're working on, is trying to get our legislators to listen and to, like, react to this need. And I think the best way folks can get involved on that space is to share stories, is to reach out to them directly and let them know that this is something that's important to you. If you want to do that in coalition with us, I'd encourage folks to check out the website at healthyfla.org and really plug in with our Healthcare for Florida Coalition, which is the specific group of folks who are working on MedEx. Our plan is to get up to Tallahassee as much as we can during the next legislative session in March and just try to have as many meetings and get in front of as many people as possible.
So what, why are they balking?
Unfortunately true, what we've seen so far is that legislators aren't responding the way that they need to be over the last 10 years. And so, like South Dakota and like Missouri, here in Florida, we're also working on a ballot initiative. Our hope is to put this question in front of legislators, or not legislators, but the community at large, and see where Floridians land on it. Polling says that polling for a long time has had support in this state at over 70%, so it's something we're really confident in.
You know what it is, too? I think a lot of Floridians don't understand and realize that Medicaid is jointly financed by states and the federal government, and Medicaid does cover people who are struggling with opioid addiction, enhances the state capacity to improve access to early interventions and things like that. And this is when we all start saying that healthcare is a human right, that you cannot just love people when they're pregnant, but when their babies are born, you say, wow, wait a minute, we have to talk about this. No, you can't do that, because you have to care about people, the born and the unborn. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because I see this all the time when you talk about Medicaid expansion. People say, well, I don't want my tax dollars going for that. Well, why not? If it's going to help people in the communities to live a better life, a quality life, why not? So do you think it's because we're not educating people enough to let them understand that Medicaid is jointly financed? And the state of Florida did refuse some money some years ago when the federal government wanted to expand Medicaid. This I remember.
Oh, you make an absolutely great point, right? Like, if I take a completely selfish viewpoint, Sita, I know you're a great person with a big heart. So let's say I'm the Grinch here and I just don't want to, like, spend my money to help take care of people. I'll tell you why Medicaid expansion is still the way to go. First of all, we've seen, because we're one of the last 10 states to do it, we've seen this experiment play out in 38 other states, and in every single one of them, the state government saves money. Florida would save an estimated $200 million a year, right? And a lot of that comes from the fact that, you know, people now just go to the emergency rooms. That's where a lot of care is spent, and it's the most expensive place to pay for care. And we as taxpayers pay for that. So even if I'm being selfish, I don't, and I'm one of these folks who doesn't want to spend that money, well, guess what? We're spending it anyway, just in the most inefficient place possible. In terms of the money that would actually come into the state, we're talking about you mentioned the matching rate. Currently, the federal government pays 60% and Florida pays 40%, right, when it comes to Medicaid matching. I think under expansion, the federal government would cover 90% and Florida would cover 10%. So already a savings there. You might ask yourself, where's all that federal money coming from? And it really just is our tax dollars being returned to us to pay for this specific program. So again, for people who don't believe in sending money to the federal government, well, here's a great way to use our Florida dollars for a Florida-specific outcome that also saves us money in other ways. We saw reports from the Florida Chamber of Commerce that shows that Floridians are paying on average like $2,000 a year extra because of the emergency room usage. We know that in states that have Medicaid expansion, private plans cost on average 7% less because you have like this general population being taken care of by the Medicaid program. So in a lot of different ways, the most efficient way to do it is through a Medicaid expansion. And then, you know, if you're a decent human being who just, like, wants to see your fellow man do better, this is the best way to do it. When you start thinking about those populations that are most impacted, right? You have in rural parts of the state where in 2020 we had 3 rural hospitals close. And what does that mean for the people living in Lake City and Stark, right? Like, they don't have healthcare options, and Medicaid expansion helps to keep rural hospitals open. You have communities of color where you have much higher rates of people who are uninsured. How do we start to close that gap? It's through Medicaid expansion. So,
and I have, but Scott, how do we make this a reality that Medicaid expansion can go forward? And why aren't more people involved? I mean, I know it's about an education, but you touched on a really great point. When the hospitals close, people have to travel. They have to leave their children home. They have to get gas money. You have to have a vehicle. Then you have to have someone to take care of your family so you could drive to another hospital. I mean, why, you know, when people run for office, we're not hearing this out in the public so that people can say, wait a minute, I want Medicaid expansion. I want to get more involved and engaged. So why aren't we seeing more people like Scott Darius out there in the state of Florida?
You know, we're trying. I think the pandemic was a tough time. Even though healthcare was top of mind for everyone, it was also hard to kind of organize, right? To get people back out there and saying that this is something that they want. We're hoping that this ballot initiative, the chance to go out there and get petitions signed where people have like an action step that they can take. Because I think a lot of times working in this Florida environment where you have a lot of folks, a lot of legislators who are just against it, maybe there's a loss of hope. No one thinks it's possible. I think what the ballot initiative helps us do is to let people know that this really is in the hands of the people and that it's possible. And as we're building that campaign, as we're reaching more people, that's a group that we can leverage to get in, to start getting in front of legislators, because it's not just about expansion. When expansion's over, there'll be the next issue and the next issue and the next issue. Mm-hmm. There are Floridians with disabilities who are still on a wait list. There are adults who can't get any dental benefits. There's just a lot of things that we need to do. And so I think the ballot initiative gives us a first step to starting to build that grassroots noise that lasts for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, people should be talking more about hearing aids and dentures and eyeglasses, because it's not just for the rich. Poor people need that too, people who can't afford insurance. But, you know, I always wonder what happens in the state legislative body there, because we always have money for war, right? But we never have money for a budget item like Medicaid. Medicaid is a budget item and a revenue item in state budgets. So what causes people to think the big picture, we can, you know, have money for something else, but not something as important as healthcare?
That's another great question, because currently the state is sitting on, I think, $11 billion in reserves. And if you factor in the fact that even like a large percentage of that is maybe earmarked for things already, there's still a couple of billion dollars left over that the state could use to do things like eliminate the wait list of 22,000 Floridians with disabilities who are waiting to get on the iBudget waiver. I wish I had the answers to why legislators haven't prioritized that, right? A lot of times it's their concept of who's deserving. And I think it's that ideological perspective about who's deserving that often keeps people out. But again, I think what they're missing is the more selfish perspective, which is, how do we have a strong economy? How do we have a strong workforce? How do we actually stop spending on some of these other programs? It's by providing people the care and access and opportunity that they need in the first place. If you do that up front, you save a lot of costs down the road. And that's the message that, you know, we haven't, for whatever reason, legislators just haven't tuned into yet.
Right.
So we keep trying.
And one of the things I noticed too, I noticed that most Medicaid enrollees get care through private managed care plans. And this I know because I speak with a lot of those people who are working for these private care plans when they come into the nursing facilities. I don't think people understand that the state of Florida does contract a lot of the Medicaid patients to private companies.
Oh, they absolutely do. And that was a pilot program started under the Jeb Bush era, and then expanded, I think, in 2014 or 15 to the whole state. And what I like to say about that is, you know, sometimes opponents of expansion will say that, oh, no, well, we don't want this big Florida program telling Florida how to do healthcare. And I would counter that Medicaid has a lot of flexibility in the program itself, and we know this because Florida has taken advantage of that flexibility to design a Florida-specific plan. They went through the managed care experiment and said, hey, this works. Let's make the whole program managed care. Well, yeah, if it's good enough, right, to work as our Medicaid program, then our program should be good enough to expand to let more people have access to those plans. But I think there's another discussion to have about where the managed care plans are and how well they've done in carrying out what
that,
they've been
that would be a great show to have maybe next day, April. But, you know, I just wanted to reiterate that Medicaid benefits reflects the needs of the population, and primarily the low-income families, individuals with disabilities, elderly individuals, and, you know, for the politicians who care so much about women and children and babies, it's kind of ironic that when time comes to expand Medicaid, that they don't put sign their names to that right away to expand it. What can we do? We have 2 minutes left. Tell us what we can do to encourage others to jump on this bandwagon to expand Medicaid.
Yeah, I think the simplest thing to do is visit healthcare.forfl, so healthcareforflorida.org, and you'll see very easy ways to sign up and join the coalition. We're doing a series of trainings over the next few months and preparing to take people up to Tallahassee, but we're also supporting the ballot initiative in that space. So for anyone who wants to get involved in any particular way, that's the best way to plug in with us, and we'll find a use for your talents. Everyone has a different talent that they can bring to the space, and all of it's useful. So we look forward to hearing from you.
Well, I tell you, you're amazing. You know, I can see why you're the executive director of Florida Voices for Health, because you have that way of speaking that it's people can understand. You break it down so nicely, and you educate people, and people want to get involved when someone like you is at the head. So thank you so much for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, no, it's my honor. Like, I get to spend a little bit of time with you. Thank you, guys.
Well, I have posted everything that you've said on our website as well as our Facebook page.
Awesome.
And our MP3 will be out very shortly for the replay of the show today. Once again, Sita, another fantastic show full of really great education, really great resources for our Florida family that's here.
Talking about family, Scott, you're expecting a family member in March of 2023.
Yes,
congratulations.
It's our first little girl. Yeah, we're really excited about it.
I am so happy for you. I meant to say to congratulate you in the beginning of the show, but God bless you and welcome to the world, baby girl.
That's right. So
awesome. Thank you, guys. If you have any tips on how to turn her into a soccer player, I'll take them.
All right. Another great edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on 1510 WWBC. Please tune in each and every Monday where we are sitting here in our living room talking to fantastic guests, getting some great education, and having a little bit of fun. We'll see you next week, y'all. Thanks.